Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2023 Youth Education Conference held in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Welcome to the tent. This is my first time in here, but have you guys been in here a lot today? This looks like the happening place to be. Like, it looks fun out here. Way more cool than inside. Although, I will say the service room on the fourth floor is pretty rockin'. So, if you ever want to come do service, come on up there. That's where I am all the rest of the day. But, I want to know, what are your favorite things you've learned today? You don't want to say? Change your mind? Okay. Anybody, what's your takeaways?
Today at the beginning, you know, we learned about the importance of the Lord saying things three times and how it's like a super way.
Pay attention. Yeah, I love that. I love that. History. Very cool. And now you're in science class because you're gonna learn about your brain. Awesome. How about you?
I learned that Moses was the best doctor in the whole Bible.
Sweet. Yes? Very good. Lots of people to meet here. Anybody else want to share your takeaways from this awesome first day?
Moses found a way to break all the commandments at the same time.
Is that for real?
Yeah. He broke all of them at the same time.
And because he saw the children of Israel worshiping the golden calf, so he said, holy calf.
And that's where we get it.
You're funny. That's funny. Yes?
And that you can never trust anybody because the moment that you turn your back, they will tag you.
Ooh, vicious tag games today? That sounds so fun. You guys, sounds fun. Very cool. You guys, this is fun because it ranges from the fun and silly to the really serious, I can apply this and make my life better. Like, that's so cool. So, I don't know why, but it's not finding my slideshow. See, we might not get to see cool pictures up here. I don't know how to do it. I'm not. I don't know if anybody's techie. They can try. Yeah, probably something as simple as that, right? All I did was turn it on. So, yeah. But I am Kenna. I have been mentoring youth for over 10 years now. I can't believe I'm that old, guys. I should know that, though, because I have adult children now, and that's weird. Like, you'll be there someday. You'll get it someday. Right now, you just think I'm old, but someday you'll be like, how did I get this old? I feel so young, and I'm how did I get this old? But that's me. I have 6 kids, 3 adult children, and 3 are at the conference today. Well, actually, 4 are at the conference today. My 22-year-old is here, and my 3 teenagers are here. So, yeah. So that's me and my family, and it was in my bio, but you guys, I love the youth. You guys are my sweet spot. I taught a class to the adults earlier today, and I was so nervous. And then I thought about coming to the youth, and I thought, oh, they're my people. I'll be okay. Like, for some reason, you guys are a lot less scary, so I appreciate that. But hopefully something here is fun, and you get to learn something that you can apply in your life. So you guys live in this awesome time of your life, where you have got something to do, people to know, things to learn, and you've got all this time. I know how busy you are, so it doesn't always feel like you have time. But you have all this time to learn and grow and develop and prepare for future life, right? Like, this is the time for that. Ha-ha, there's the slides. Thanks. Perfect. So I always tell my kids this. I'm going to tell you guys this. That there is no time like right now for digging in and getting a really great education. You will not be done when you get to be, you know, graduate from high school age. You will never be done learning, ever. But right now, in this time, it is your primary job. And when you're an adult, it switches, and it's your secondary job. Does that make sense? So right now is the time where you can just dig in and learn. And I know how busy you are, and it feels like you're trying to fit all these things. But if you can see it as the time of your life where you are becoming, you are growing, you are learning, you're becoming, and you want to get the most done as possible, right? But this is the time. This is the time to dig in, to learn, to prepare. Because when is there a better time, right? And you guys are homeschooled, so you have a little bit more leeway sometimes on, you can individualize it a little bit. You can individualize it in public school too, I guess, by your extracurriculars. But you guys can dig into the things you love. I always say, go broad in everything and go deep in the things you love. So learn everything under the sun and go deep in the things you love. Learn a lot about those few things that you love. So today I want to talk about how to make the most of this time. This time of preparation and learning and growth, because we are busy, right? And there is a lot to do. So to do that, I'm going to talk about brain anatomy. You all knew that, right? You read the class description. You knew you were going to learn about your brain today. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Our brain, they are just barely touching the surface on what our brain is and does and how it does it. And they're learning new things all the time, all the time. And it doesn't, like, erase what they already knew. It just adds layers and layers and layers to it. So I'll tell you a little bit about this. So this is in your handout, but this is the model of the brain. Okay, there's the model of the brain. See the big area? It's called the cerebral cortex. That is the thinking brain. It is an amazing piece of anatomy that it's actually the one that sets us apart from every other life form on Earth, that thinking brain, the largeness of it, the complexity of it. But we're not going to talk about that first. We're going to talk about the other part, the part that we do share with every other organism on Earth. They call it the limbic system. They also call it the primitive system, the reptile brain, and the monkey brain. It really is called that in literature and in the scientific journals. It's called the reptilian brain, the monkey brain, and the primitive brain. We'll call it the limbic system because that's the more scientific name. But this is what we share with every other organism. And it's not massive like the cerebral cortex. It's actually really small in our brain, but it has a really important job. So it's the autonomous brain. Do you guys know what autonomous means? Yeah. Works by itself. So the autonomous brain is always working in the background. It keeps your heart beating. It keeps your lungs breathing. It keeps you alive, really. It regulates the hormones that help you feel tired or energized. It regulates all those things without us knowing. It sends out stress hormones. So it is the stress center of our brain. And it does all those things really well while we're not even thinking about them. Our thinking brain can affect it, but it largely does it just all on the own in the background. So its primary job, that primitive brain's primary job, is to keep us safe and alive. And the key players we're going to talk about today are the amygdala and the hippocampus. Do you see those up there? So the hypothalamus is important too, because it's the one that regulates the body functions, the autonomous that way. But we're going to talk about the amygdala and the hippocampus today. So this is what I want you to know about these things. The amygdala is scanning all the time. It's just scanning. It gets the visual input from your eyes, and it's scanning all the time, and it's asking this question essentially. What happened last time? What happened last time? What happened last time? And did I survive? Like, that is what it's saying all the time. What happened last time and did I survive? Was I safe? Did I survive? That's what it's doing. And where is it scanning? It is scanning the hippocampus. The hippocampus is where we store memories, not thought memories, emotional memories. That's where it stored the times you were scared or really happy, any of those emotions. They're stored in the hippocampus. So the amygdala is scanning the hippocampus and saying, okay, have I seen this before? And what happened last time when I saw this? And was I safe? Was it a good experience? Did I die? Okay, I didn't die. I'm still here, right? So the amygdala is just constantly scanning like this. And the answers to those questions determine whether we stay in the parasympathetic mode, which is the mode of relaxation and calm, or if we switch into the stress state. The answer to those questions. That's how we decide. That's how our body decides. And then it sends the message to the hypothalamus that sends out cortisol and adrenaline and says, we're not safe. I'm not safe for some reason right now. So your brain is wired to want safety more than change, which means that it's kind of resistant to change, even good change. Ever wondered why it's so hard to make a new good habit or break an old one? Part of the reason is in the amygdala, and part of it is in the other part of the brain that we'll talk about later. But your amygdala is responsible for your perception of emotions, fear, sadness, anger. It's active, and it's accessing memories that you can't put into words, because the primitive brain doesn't speak in words. It speaks in emotions. So did I lose you? Did that all make sense? That made sense. Awesome. So this area of your brain is running without your control in the background of your life all the time. It's on autopilot. And I, for one, you guys, am very, very grateful. Can you imagine if we had to think about breathing or think about our heartbeat? Or even if you had to, like every time you got up, you had to scan for your toothbrush instead of just knowing intuitively where to grab it, right? Or walk into the kitchen and you'd be like, where's the cups? And you'd have to like scan and look every time. Our habits are on autopilot, and we walk in, we open the cupboard with the cups, we get it out, we get a drink of water, and our thinking brain isn't thinking about that at all, right? It's thinking about other things while we do these things. When you're a brand new driver, how many of you are old enough to have a learner's permit or a driver's license? Yeah, so when you're learning to drive, where is it? It's up here in the thinking brain, right? You are right there. You have to think about everything. Once you know and it gets automatic, the longer you've been driving, the more it moves to automatic. And you can think about other things while it's just doing the habit pathways. Isn't that interesting? Our brains are really cool. And I love my autonomous brain. I love my primitive brain because it really does take care of us. And I'll probably skip that, but that was good. All right, so what if I want to change my habits? What then, right? How can we work with this system instead of opposite this system? Yes? Yes, Atomic Habits is a great book. I love that book. That's so good. Yeah, for sure. And it is spot on working with your amygdala, because what your amygdala, it doesn't like change, but you can get under the radar of the amygdala if you're under 5% change, right? Like if you are just incremental change, then your amygdala is not going to freak out, and it's not going to send the signal that it's not safe and something's changing and they can't find, you know, proof. So what's strange is in our emotional responses, sometimes our amygdala gets it wrong. So say that if we automatically respond to a situation with anger or frustration, right? Like maybe our sibling does something and we automatically respond to anger enough, we build this habit pathway, and it requires mental effort to change that habit. All the while, the amygdala is scanning what happened last time and did I survive? And even though our thinking brain doesn't really like the reaction that we choose, our primitive brain might say, you know what, I survived. It was just fine. I actually, you know, got some emotional release in that yell period or whatever, right? In the frustration period like that. That actually emotionally was okay for me, so I'm not going to sound the alarm for that. But we have a thinking brain, and we want to change those habits, right? We don't always want to do that. So so are we at the mercy of our limbic autonomous brain? No. Of course not, right? Because what else do we have? A big, massive thinking part of our brain. But we can also use the knowledge of the limbic brain to help us, because there's some things like what we talked about already, just small incremental change. It flies under the radar of the amygdala. And if you do it consistently, it can lead to really big results. So if you try to make too much change all at once, then sometimes we get resistance in our own heart and mind, and we don't ever make it there. But if we just do the right next step the next day, and the next day do the same, then it's really amazing what we can do. So also, if you want to change habits, you have to change the gap between stimulus and response. So here's the stimulus. Something happens in my family that makes me mad. Here's the response. I yell, right? Or what's another one? a better one. I'm driving down the road, and out of the corner of my eye, I see somebody cut me off. I automatically brake. That one's good. I don't need to widen that gap, right? But if it's something we want to change, we want to widen that gap between stimulus and response and let ourselves not just automatically go there. Sometimes it feels impossible when we're breaking habits because it's so automatic. But this knowledge can help us because we can put little things in place to help us. So do you guys remember back in conference in 2021, the talk that was called 1% Better, and they talked about the British cycling team? Do you guys remember that one? So I have a picture of them. So these guys, if you remember, they were always losing until they had a coach that had them do just 1% better every time. And this totally fits into the amygdala stuff we're talking about. So this coach did the 1% better, and they started winning, remember? So this is what Elder Dunn said about that. He said, British cyclists have now won the storied Tour de France an astonishing 6 times. During the past 4 Olympic Games, Great Britain has been the most successful country across all cycling disciplines, and in the recently concluded Tokyo Olympics, the UK won more gold medals in cycling than any other country. So that is a really real-life example of that small incremental change that can make really big results. Here's what Elder Dunn also said. Remember, just as we would not attempt to go from being Attila the Hun to Mother Teresa overnight, so too should we reorient our patterns of improvement incrementally. Even if the changes needed in your life are wholesale, begin at a small scale. That's especially true if you are feeling overwhelmed or discouraged. He did give a very important caveat. If we are involved in grievous sins, the Lord is clear and unequivocal. We need to stop, get help from our bishop, and turn away from such practices immediately. And in that, that's your help. You go to your bishop, and he's going to help you widen that gap between stimulus and response. And it's worth it, right? When in those moments, if you ever have a moment, you guys, when you think, I can't help it, it is just the way I am, that's not your thinking brain. That's your amygdala. Tell it who's boss and just start widening that gap. And how we do that, you guys, if we're on autopilot and we're going to go stimulus response right away, then as soon as the first step is to notice the response and backtrack, because it's automatic. But as soon as it does it, we can kick in our thinking brain, right? So if my, let's just use the yelling example. If something happens and I yell and I don't want to do that anymore, to widen the gap, the first thing to do is anytime you yell, to pull back and apologize right away. That's the first step to widening the gap. It's like as soon as you realize it, you pull back, and then you're going to retrain until it widens, and you will be able to put in a gap larger than that. If you, get distracted studying when you know you shouldn't and you want to widen that gap, then as soon as you find yourself getting distracted studying, you backtrack, and you just use your thinking brain to teach your amygdala that this is actually safe. Lay down all those emotional memories in the hippocampus so that it can scan and say, oh yeah, I was better off when I didn't do that thing that I don't want to do. So when you're feeling inspired to do better, to be better in any area, sports, gospel habits, study habits, pick your right next step and go for it. Just line upon line. That's the first thing. The second thing is to use your thinking brain. So when we tell ourselves a better story, then we can change what we're thinking. So this is what it is. The amygdala, as you know, is scanning what happened last time. And when it finds a threat, it floods our body with adrenaline and cortisol, and we are in stress mode. Yes?
One question. What happens when it doesn't recognize
me? Stress? It probably panics because it doesn't have anything to rely on to decide. That's the change that it panics about. Yeah, good question. So just a tiny bit later. So the visual cortex goes straight to our limbic brain, but a tiny bit later, less than seconds, it goes to our thinking brain. So basically, the information eventually reaches there too. Have you ever been startled by something out of the corner of your eye and then you look at it and you realize it's not something to be afraid of, that's this response. Like your amygdala is responding, what is that thing out of the corner of my eye that I don't recognize? And then you look over and you think, oh, it's just my dog or whatever, right? Like something that surprises you. That is kind of how I can explain that. So to help us put that gap between stimulus and response and how to lay down the better memories, we need to tell ourselves a better story. Did you know that the amygdala cannot tell if something is real or imagined? It's not smart enough. Remember, it's not the thinking part of the brain. So we can actually use that to our advantage. If we are constantly telling ourselves a sad story, it's going to believe us, and it's going to scan those memories like it's true. But if we tell ourselves a better story, then it will scan those memories and think it's true. So that's kind of cool, right, that our thoughts have power to train our amygdala.
It is cool, but it can also be dangerous if you actually dream something.
Uh-huh. Yeah, dreams, they can get stored there too, and movies that you watch can get stored there. Yeah, bad TV, they can get stored there. And good TV, yep.
I was at my uncle's house, and I had a terrible dream. And so whenever I woke up in the middle of the night, I thought I saw everything that was going on in the dream.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't it funny how sometimes when we wake up from these terrible dreams, we know it's a dream. Our thinking brain is on again. We know it's a dream, but we have to process it. Like somehow we still have the emotions and we still have these feelings that we have to actually process. We have to tell somebody about it, or we have to tell ourselves the story that it's not really true. It's interesting that it has such emotions in our dreams. Yeah. So, okay, so tell yourself a better story. What we tell ourselves about the perceived danger can either quiet down or rev up the response already in place. So, breaking bad habits. Be patient. Catch it as soon as you can. If you've developed the automatic response, it may take a minute to rewire it, but do it. It's worth the effort. And tell yourself a better story. Rewrite the responses in your brain. If you ever hear yourself saying the words never or always, they are probably not true. They never listen to me. I always get last, right? Those are probably not true. Let those be a signal to your thinking brain. Wait, I don't think I'm telling myself a true story at this moment, right? So did you know that athletes imagine their performance, you know, to be better at it? So that's the amygdala. That's actually using this area of our brain to convince ourselves that we can do something, and then we can. It's really amazing. So keep that knowledge of the limbic part of your brain, and we're going to switch to the other diagram on the handout. And that shows the neurons firing. Yes. Gray matter is that cerebral cortex. And actually, we're going to talk about that a little bit right now, because we've got this gray matter, the cerebral cortex, that we think of when we think of our brain. But right below the gray matter is, this is a quote from Scientific American, because I had to say it just right. Below the surface layer, billions of tightly packed bundles of axons, nerve fibers, connect neurons into the gray matter, into circuits. So right underneath this gray is the white matter. And this is something that science is just barely exploring. They've been exploring neurons for a long time. This whole white matter underneath and its role is pretty new, and it's pretty cool. So sometimes, I will show you this. So this is kind of a diagram that kind of shows you. And this one didn't make it into your handout because I didn't find it before I had to turn in that handout. But this is kind of what's happening in your white matter under the brain. So, okay, stay with me. Every human thought, every movement, every feeling is a precisely timed electric signal traveling through a chain of neurons. Okay, our brains are doing so much all the time. So these, do they have them labeled? I don't think they have this one on there. The oligodendrocytes and the astrocytes, that thing, They sense the nerve firing and they respond by wrapping myelin around the circuit. Myelin wraps the nerve fibers and it increases strength, speed, and accuracy. And the more a circuit is fired, the more myelin optimizes it, the stronger, the faster, and more fluent our movement and thoughts become. Okay, what did you just learn? Was that confusing? Okay. We do have a lot of electricity in our brain. What were you going to say?
Every feeling, isn't it like when it's the growing up process kind of? With that building up, your movements become faster?
Yes. Yes, so a baby learning to walk is building myelin. It is. It's building myelin. Myelin is skill. Myelin is skill. So when we fire a neuron, it meets. And they say, you know, they used to think that you just fired a neuron enough and it created a pathway. It does. It's made of myelin. Myelin is what wraps it around. These dendrites, anytime you do something, is wrapping around myelin. And in the brains of people who are excellent at something, in the area of the brain that shows the excellent part, is full of myelin. Doctors, after they have studied and passed their final exam in medical school, show more myelin than before they were taking that class in the learning area of their brain. Sports, you know, sports people, they have the myelin wrapping around and improving your movements until it's automatic. So that's the science behind it. That's the white matter. It's sending the circuits. The gray matter is thinking, sending circuits. And so every movement, every thought, every action we do starts from here. We feel like it starts from, you know, wherever. Like, I feel like I reach from my arm. But really, it's a message from here to here to here, just almost instantaneous because our brains are amazing. So that's what it is. So did that make sense now? Enough. You guys are like, maybe, maybe. Yeah, I know. It's the brain. It's pretty cool, though. Here's the point. Nerve firings grow myelin. Myelin controls impulse speed. Impulse speed is skill. So if you want skill, you have to fire your nerves so that your body will grow the myelin. So if you want to grow some skill, you got to grow some myelin. So anytime you're, like, working on skills, you're out there, like, dribbling or whatever, right, and you want to get better at it, you're like, going out to grow more myelin, Mom. I'll be right back, right? If you want to expand, and we'll get into this more, but if you want to expand your learning, this sweet spot is right on the edge of ability. That's where myelin is grown. If you go out, say you want to improve your dribbling, right, and just do what you've always done, if you want to play the piano and you go play what you've always played, you're not growing myelin. You're just using the myelin that's already there. You have to be right on the edge of ability. You have to be right there doing the part where you'll make mistakes. Making mistakes is actually a biological necessity of growing myelin. So we have to stop being afraid of the mistake zone, right? We just have to stop being afraid of that. Because only if you make the mistake, back up, redo it the right way, and you are right there on the edge of ability, and you are growing it by repeat, repeat, repeat until you get it right. Good question. Good question.
Well, as Tom said, it said, like, he figured out 2,000 ways how not to make a light bulb.
Yeah.
So you're learning what is wrong.
Yeah.
What doesn't work.
Absolutely. Good point. Good point. Love that. Yes. It just travels really fast through our nervous system. So our nervous system moves through our whole body, and it's how our brain connects to everything else. And so the travel speed from our brain to our nervous system to wherever else it sends the message is so fast. It just has really fast speeds. Good question. Good question. Okay, so how do we grow myelin? We practice. We practice. When we fire our circuits in the right way, then our myelin responds by wrapping new layers of insulation on the circuits. The thicker the myelin gets, the better it insulates, and the faster and more accurate our movements and thoughts become. But not just any practice. Deep practice. And that's what I was talking about. Operating at the edge of your ability where you make mistakes makes you smarter. Yeah, yeah. When you touch something hot, the signal goes the other direction to your brain, and it sends the signal back there. And it's so fast, too, right? Because we are taking our hand off that hot stove immediately, and that's how fast it takes to send. So people that don't have working nervous systems can actually not know when they're being burned because the signal's not getting sent to their brain. So we're grateful for that, aren't we? Yeah. Yeah, because it stems from here, not from here. Yeah. Yep. What were you saying, Grayson?
Well, I was just saying that you could get really bald if you didn't have nerve systems because you got to just...
Yeah, you could. You could get very burned. It would be not be safe, right? So the best way to build your skill, we'll just call it skill. It's really building myelin. It's building skill. The best way to build a skill is to fire it, attend to the mistakes, fire it again, over and over and over and over. Struggle is, again, a biological requirement to grow skill. There are people that is true. Yeah.
Like, I can't feel these two pressure points or this one.
Yeah. So then the signal's not getting sent to your brain, right? And you have to, like, bodies are so amazing at compensating. There's probably other ways that your brain can send messages to, you know, compensate it if that was a dangerous moment for you. Yeah. Okay. I want to talk about Brazil. Okay. All right. Brazil. Soccer champions come disproportionately from the country of Brazil. Part of it is because they're big. Part of it is because they all love soccer. And part of it is because they play a game called futsal. Have you guys ever heard of futsal? It's football in a hall. So so there's this guy. He's British. His name is Simon Clifford. He was from England, like I said. And he wanted to know why the Brazilians were so good. So he actually went and visited these Brazilian camps, and he discovered futsal. So this is what it is. In futsal, the ball is half the size of a soccer ball but weighs twice as much. It hardly bounces. They play on basketball-sized courts of concrete, wood floor, or dirt instead of grass. They have fewer players, 5 to 6 instead of the standard 11 for the soccer field. And because of that layout, in the size of the court and the number of the players, there's nonstop actions. Every player gets more time with the ball. That's the ticket right there, right? That's the thing. So this is what Daniel Coyle said in his book Talent Code. Futsal compresses soccer's essential skills into a small box. It places players inside the deep practice zone, making and correcting errors, constantly generating solutions to vivid problems. So Simon brought this idea back to England, and he made what he called the Brazilian Soccer School, and they would play futsal in there. And he even had samba music playing because he called it the Brazilian Soccer School. So he made it really Brazilian. It sounds really fun. And within 4 years, they were winning international championships in Europe. Why? What do you think?
One, with the physical layout of, like, you know, the ball is heavier.
Mm-hmm. I love it. It's the same thing, isn't it? For knights versus the soccer players.
And then also what the guy said earlier, you have fewer people in this smaller area, and so you're having to ball a lot more than just like running and like, oh, I'm open.
So you can make things harder in practice.
Yeah.
So when they're performing, it's easier.
Yeah, yeah. What were you going to say?
So it feels smaller and
same idea. I love it. I love it. Did I see another hand back here? Did you have your hand raised? No. You did not. Never mind. Anybody else over here? Yeah. So the sweet spot for deep practice is right on the edge of your ability. And in this futsal game, they were right there on the edge of their ability all the time. The Brazilian soccer players that have these amazing soccer moves, a lot of them say, I learned it on the futsal court. That's where they learned it, with this harder ball, this heavier ball. They were able to do it with that, and then they translated it easily to the soccer field. So if you slow, right where you make mistakes and you slow down and correct them, that is your sweet spot. And you got to do it enough that it makes a difference, right? Wrapping that mile in around for the famous 10,000 hours, right? We've all heard the 10,000 hour quote about that's how many hours it takes to create skill. I would say you better be using deep practice more often than just, you know, doing something to really develop that skill. So, yeah.
So I perform sometimes because of my music teacher.
Uh-huh.
And so we went to home twice to perform. And the first time before, I was really, really nervous because I hadn't had that much experience performing.
Yeah.
But then, so it was like one on Monday, and then the next one was on Wednesday. And so we performed on Monday, and I was like panicked. But then on Wednesday, I was more ready for it because I had practiced.
Yeah.
Honestly, if it was me choosing originally, I'd say I wouldn't have wanted to perform that fastly. But after it happened, I was able to do it with confidence.
Awesome. What a great example. Thank you for that. Yeah, that's cool. I want to check the time real quick. Ah, okay, great. So deep practice right on the edge of your ability is the place where the greatest learning can occur. Do not be afraid of the mistake zone. Say it with me. I will not be afraid of the mistake zone. We as humans get so embarrassed sometimes when we make mistakes, and we got to like kick that paradigm out the window, because if we're making mistakes all the time and correcting and getting better, then that is us growing, right? So let's kick that embarrassment out of mistakes out the window and just tell ourselves a better story. I am learning. I am growing. Yes?
A few times I've been doing stuff with sports and I like struck out or stuff like that. But when I do, as soon as I get back in the dugout, I rethink what I did wrong.
Yeah. I love how you just combined some ideas, because you just talked about practice and you talked about thinking about it, right? And that combines both ideas that we've been talking about today, both areas of the brain. So the actual doing of it is strengthening that myelin and that skill circuit. And thinking about it is strengthening, laying down new memories in the hippocampus so that our amygdala is not going to freak out, right, when we're doing something different. And it's just going to think, I've done this 1,000 times in my thoughts, but they don't know the difference. Yeah, I love that. Okay, so this works for athletic ability. We've talked a lot about that. It works for musical ability. It works for thinking ability, just simply like if you want to read the hard books, go right on the edge of your ability and read the hardest one you can find, right? If you want to read classics and you're not quite at, I don't know, Aristotle, start with Dickens. Or what if you started with Jane Austen? Or maybe Jane Austen's already easy for some of us, and so we go, you know, somewhere else. Just go on the edge of your ability. Good books, classic books, right? The real good ones that are going to give you good information. But go right on that edge, and you will increase that ability, too. So it works in every area of your life. Yes?
The main thing I've learned with performing is that when you're performing and you mess up, the only way you can mess up more is when you hold on to, oh, I messed up. No one else is going to notice but you. And if you hold on to it, you just keep messing up, and it makes it worse and worse and harder.
I love that. That sounds like That sounds like it's an emotional response, right, that you're trying to temper. Yeah, back in that limbic area of the brain. I love that. So if you have a habit, let's go back to habits again. We want to add myelin to the right circuits. So habits are circuits wrapped with lots of myelin to make it automatic. So to make a new habit, you need to add myelin to new circuits. You actually don't lose myelin. You don't. Unless you have a certain disease or you're old. Yeah, sometimes we lose it when we get old. But most of the time, we keep our myelin. And so once you've circuited that path and you don't want to use it anymore, the best way to do it is to focus somewhere else. Elder Bednar said once that the best way to get rid of a bad habit is to replace it with something else. And he used this jar image of, like, instead of a jar funnel, instead of, like, you have to, like, fill it up and then the bad just comes out. There's just no room for it anymore. And so you can't unwrap the myelin, but you can strengthen other areas, which is why you add myelin to the right circuits, and replacing bad habits is easier than just stopping bad habits, right? Like just stopping and omitting it isn't as easy, but replacing it, that's where the success goes because you're rerouting it to different circuits. Yes?
So how does serious brain trauma fit into this?
Ooh. Okay, the brains are so complex, right? And there's different areas of the brain that control different things. And so it depends on where the trauma is, but usually that trauma is the connection between your limbic area and your thinking area. So, Karina, can I talk about you? My daughter is sitting in the back row. This is Karina. She has cerebral palsy. When she was born, she went how many minutes without breathing? I don't know. I was asleep. You weren't there, but you're baby. Yeah, like 5 minutes. I don't know. She went a little bit of time without breathing, and in that time, her brain was damaged. Okay. When she was, 6 months old, they did an MRI to try to figure out where it was, and they couldn't see anything wrong. The damage was so small, they couldn't see anything wrong. When they had the MRI again at 12 months to get an official diagnosis, I don't know how important it is. We all knew she had cerebral palsy without the official diagnosis because she showed the signs. But to get the official diagnosis, we found it. It was a little bit of brain damage in the basal ganglia area of the brain, which is the part that connects movement. It's actually a communication center between the thinking area and the limbic area. And so for her, when her circuits fire, they fire with movement. They're not straightforward. Her brain is smart, and she's brilliant, and she's awesome. And her body just can't keep up because it's like that little tiny basal ganglia has a little bit of damage. So the brain is so complex. Every type of damage affects it different ways. But
like if you come out of a coma and you don't remember things, what happened to the myelin?
The myelin's still there. Okay. Myelin's still there after a coma. You probably do still have the habits. I don't know. Not that I know of, but I don't know everything about myelin. But myelin doesn't, it only gets, it's probably the connection between the white matter and the gray matter or something. It's probably a connection, a neuron thing. I'm guessing here. Don't quote me on this. But it makes sense to me that it would be a connection thing. It wouldn't be sending the right message. But if the right message was sent, it would sail right along that skill, and you would be able to, even though you didn't remember why, you would remember how to do something that you knew before. Does that help? Does that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
How does this apply to things that some people can be born with? Just take ADHD.
Yeah.
People can be born with that. People can develop it in life. They can come from traumatic brain.
Yeah, yeah.
All sorts of things like that. When people are born with it, it usually happens because a part of their brain is missing. I've done a decent amount of study on it because that happened myself.
Okay. Gotcha, gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha, that's fascinating. And I don't know enough to teach you more about it. But that would be worth looking into, because what is it about the myelin or the building of myelin or maybe the message to the amygdala, right? Like what's going on in those areas of the brain? I don't know. Uh-huh. I mean, it makes sense, but I don't know. It seems to me like people with parts of the brain that aren't working, that our bodies are amazing at compensating, right? Like, if you have an area of your brain that's not optimal, our brain has a really amazing way of sending circuits around it and through it to find another way. I don't know all the ways and means of it. I just know it's amazing. I would love to know more about that. How about you?
So based on a question that he asked, okay. Since the circuits are still there, would it be something like if they lost their memory and someone was like, oh, you used to be able to like play piano or something and like hear and like start to teach them, would they still be able, like would they go back up to where they were?
If the connections are still in place to communicate to that part. But if there's a connection in place, then I imagine it would just sell right there. Like there are stories, right, of people with severe brain damage that don't remember, but they sit down at the piano and they can play. And that must be sending the circuit over the myelin, but the thinking part of it isn't there. And sometimes if the circuit is not connected, then they wouldn't be able to play because the circuit wouldn't be connected to that myelin. So it depends on where the damage and how the damage and all that. Yeah, brains are fascinating, and seriously, we do not know very much about our brain. Yeah.
I actually survived TBI.
Okay.
When I was an infant, so what he was saying, where sometimes we do things without thinking about if it's appropriate or not,
yeah.
Can happen, because I've done that on multiple occasions where it's appropriate, maybe in one setting, but it wasn't in the one I needed. And it's just really kind of a struggle to figure it, to think through it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you actually say, hey, is this appropriate in this situation? Is that what you mean?
Well,
that's awesome.
If I've done it already, then I ask my parents about it later just to check.
They're a good source. I love that you check with them. That's great. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Good question. I don't know. I will have time to do something, but I have something that's not actually a game that we might do that you may or may not like, but it might put you right on the edge of your ability. And some people it will be easy. I don't know. Okay, so let's see. Where are we? Yeah. Okay, there's a little equation for you. Deep practice for hours and hours and hours leads to excellence. Here's a quote. When we retain, what we retain depends on our emotional response to an experience, how novel it is, where and when the event occurred, and our level of attention and motivation during the event. So this is connecting those two areas we've been exploring, right? Connecting those two areas of our brain. The limbic emotional part of the brain and the myelin wrapping. Do you see which one? I mean, I highlighted them for you. You can probably see. For the best scenario, it all has to be working together, right? For the best scenario, it's got to be working together, right? You've got to have the right emotions. You've got to tell yourself the better story with incremental improvement. It makes the limbic part of your brain happy. Plus, the emotional wins send a big signal to your brain, and it will make you want to do it again, right? It'll make it a habit. And then the right level of attention, the second thing, is right on that sweet spot of ability. So I want you to take a minute, like for reals, on that part in your paper where it says my brain fitness plan. I want you to take just a second and write down something. Here's some questions to help your mind thinking about what it would be. What areas have come to your mind while you've been learning these things? What is the thing you want to grow? What habits do you want to create? What do you want to increase your excellence in? So take a minute in your notebook and just jot down the ideas that you want to start implementing because of what you know, right? I'm not going to be afraid of mistakes, or I'm going to tell myself a better story, or whatever, right? I'm going to widen the widen the gap between stimulus and response by moving backwards right away, or, you know, whatever. So just take 1 minute and just write that down. Do you want those questions again so you can think about them some more? You're all good. Okay, awesome. Just take a minute. This is a cool fun fact that has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but it has to do with anatomy. So the eyes have rods and cones in them. One of them is really good at distinguishing color, and one of them is really good at distinguishing movement. And in anatomy and biology, girls have more of the one that can perceive colors, and boys have more of the one that can perceive movement. Isn't that cool? Like, so when the girls are like, that's not blue, and the boy's like, you know, it's just kind of a fun fact. Yeah, yeah, right? But then the movement, that's like what the boys see, like in general, right? There's always exceptions.
So when people are colorblind, they don't have that specific, or is it damage? Or like, what's, one's colorblind, one's colorblind.
It's the signal. Yeah, I don't know if it's the actual there. I think it's the signal from that to the brain. But you guys are asking me really good questions about the brain that I need to go learn more about. Yes?
When you say that boys are better at movement, like, what do you mean by movement?
Like, if they're, like, okay, the cars are racing by, and they're like, did you just see that Ferrari drive by, right? And they're like, it moved so fast, but they can see it easier in general. You know, just that kind of thing. Or they're watching sports. Why do boys in general, girls love to watch sports too, but in general, boys like sports more than girls do to watch it. Well, I think it's because they can see the movements and see all the plays. They like that slow-mo play, but they're watching it in real time too, you know. Anyway. All right. I think I've gone through the slides. Yeah, that's the slides. So we are done with that. And I just got the 1 minute. 1 minute. So we are not going to have time to go on the very edge of our ability together. Sing. Do a round. Yeah, I think it'd be fun. Like, some people it's a strength, but really learning something new right on the edge, I think it would be fun. But we talked so long about the brain, we just didn't do it. But that's okay. So I encourage you all to go out there, train your amygdala, and build myelin. Go team, go!
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.